Louis XVI, who had been tried for treason, between December 11, 1792 and January 15, 1793. He was convicted of treason. He would be beheaded on January 20th, 1793. The Girondins had certainly been in favor of the conviction of Louis, but about execution, this was a different matter. The vote, actually, within the convention concerning the actual execution of the king was quite close. The conviction had not been, but his sentence was. The Girondins had vacillated then concerning the sentence of the king, whether to exile him or to execute him. They also suffered, I think, from a problem of style. These were radical times. The revolution seemed to be in danger. And the Girondins tended to be moderates, people who wanted to compromise, to talk about decisions. They were certainly in favor of maintaining the war effort, of defending the Republic at home. But in a sense, they didn't themselves capture that sense of revolutionary élan, that sense of desperation and fanaticism, actually, that the Jacobins so clearly demonstrated. And also, finally, the Girondins, as we've indicated before, but I think it's an important point, much of the revolutionary impetus would come from the citizens of Paris themselves, from the so-called sections of Paris, the sans-culottes. As the revolution proceeded in 1792 and 93, not only does one have a split within the convention between the Girondins and the Jacobins, or factions within them, what one really is beginning to see is a split between a radical revolutionary Paris and a far more moderate, even conservative, countryside. The Girondins had their base of power in the provinces, and hence were constantly out of touch with the more revolutionary sections of Paris. For the Jacobins, for the Committee of Public Safety, there were three great areas of concern, as we've said, to win the war. How would they do this? How would a French army, which had been largely stripped of its experienced military leaders, aristocrats who had defected, who had become émigrés, and now were actually fighting against the revolution. How would the revolution defend itself against the coalition of some of the most powerful states in Europe? In August of 1793, they took a radical step. They introduced the first universal military conscription, the so-called levée en masse. It was wildly popular in France. They called upon the French, the citizens of the French Republic, to rise to defend not the Bourbons, not any sort of dynastic order, but rather to defend the nation, to defend France, to defend the Republic. This levée en masse would excite tremendous popular support. There was a kind of preview of what might be unleashed if, in fact, the nation could be mobilized in a military fashion. Already in September of 1792, in one of the first encounters between the German armies of the old regime and the new French Revolutionary Army, at the Battle of Valmy, the French army, without the discipline of the old armies of the Ancien Regime, tended to run everywhere, ragtag kinds of tactics, more like the Indians or the American colonists against the British. The German armies, with their strict discipline, fighting in the traditional way of 18th century armies, marching up one column, firing, dropping to their knee, the next column firing, dropping to their knee, and so on. The French army at Valmy, the Revolutionary Army, had seemed to be absolutely chaotic, out of control. And they absolutely routed the Germans. Johann Wolfgang von Goethe, the peripatetic German playwright, poet, civil servant, and all-around Renaissance man, one of those people who always seemed to show up at a pivotal point to make an observation in this period, Goethe happened to be there. He watched from the hillside as the French Revolutionary armies engaged the armies of the old regime. And as he was usually correct in these things, he noted in his diary, "Today I have witnessed the beginning of the modern age." there was already a sense for perspicacious observers like Goethe that something was afoot. If you could tap the élan, the emotion, if you could elicit commitment on the part of the people, this could overcome all sorts of traditional military training and so on.